Om Gyana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Maramapi Shaktiputra Matrasurupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Atarim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shriyatav Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Some of you were present. I can recognize some of the faces at the talk I gave last night. One of the main themes of which was, you like to come in, sit down, be comfortable. I mean, that's one of the main things we have to say, that you can't be comfortable in this material world, but you don't have to make yourself unnecessarily uncomfortable. Some people, okay, I tell you what, why don't I speak for some time in English and then some time in Hindi? Kitne log hamare beech angrezi bilkul nahi aate hain? Koi hai aise? Kitne? Do they understand Hindi? No, not all Nepalis understand Hindi, do they?
No, all Nepalis understand Hindi.
Really?
Yes.
Out in the mountains and everything? They don't not understand their worry. They're all different languages, right?
Yes,
the Kathmandu Valley language is Newari.
Yes.
Then in the Terai, many people speak Bhojpuri.
Yes. We have Bhojpuri speaking too.
So, like that. Then there's, what other languages? I can't remember. I was used to work on. Anyway, doesn't matter. No, I don't speak Bhojpuri. Well, sorry, there are over. There are. Yeah, that's why it's. That's why they had to make a national language for India. Whoops. They didn't used to have such big countries, little countries. People didn't. There wasn't all this mass communication and all this kind of thing. Everything was local. You didn't need to go from one side of the world to the other just to get some roti and dal, or bread and butter. So, I was speaking last night about the nature of illusion in this world and the need to become free from it in this human form of life. This is an understanding that is central to what we could call Hinduism and Buddhism. And of course, the Hinduism in Nepal is quite thickly mixed with Buddhism, probably because of all the Tibetans who came in. And Hinduism's always ready to absorb something new, for better or for worse. It's not always good. A lot of the things nowadays are really nonsense, to say the truth. All kinds of people claiming themselves to be God. It's another kind of illusion. Anyway, this understanding of Maya and the need to be free from it. You want a chair? If I stand for a long time, I get sore legs, so presumably others do. So the need to be free, the understanding of Maya, illusion, and the need to be free from it is central to Vedic culture and other cultures such as Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, that have derived from that. But it's quite foreign, not only culturally but conceptually, to Western way of thought, that we're in a big illusion. That we are in illusion is understood, that this goes on life after life. It causes us to be born again and again and again. Hare Krishna. But even if we don't accept that we are born and again and again and again, anyone can should be able to understand that we are in illusion, in as much as we give so much importance to ourselves and our own human situation, considering that we are tiny living beings on a tiny little blob floating in a vast universe, and our whole lifespan is just a blip in time. Considering this is one of the reasons that people in the Western world are becoming atheists. This whole idea that, well, God created us, but then what did he create all the rest of the universe for? It doesn't seem to make any sense. But that's all covered in the Vedic understanding. You can see this chart here, which shows that in Vedic understanding, it's already understood that we're tiny living beings in... Actually, the word universe doesn't really... The word universe, which is derived from Latin, I guess that would be, that's a concept of an all-encompassing entity. But the Vedic concept is quite different. That might fit more with the more recently coined term multiverse, in which there are so many different Brahmandas. The Vedic term is Brahmanda, which literally means an egg of Brahma. And all of these together are called Jagat or Vishva. Jagat means Gachatiti Jagat, that which keeps on moving. That is Jagat. And Vishva means that which encompasses everything. So in the Vedic conception, it's already understood that we are tiny living beings in one universe, but even though the universe is massive, it's only one of many. And this is the material world, and beyond that is the spiritual world. And there is God. And there is life on other planets also. He didn't just create them so we can look at them through our telescopes and become atheists. Now, we may say, well, we didn't see life on other planets. We may not see it, because our sensory perception is limited. According to Vedic understanding, which is that statement itself is a bit of a misnomer, because Veda means knowledge. So if it's knowledge, it's not just a way of understanding, but it should be correct. We don't say, well, in my opinion, 2 plus 2 equals 4. It's just 2 plus 2 equals 4. It's either true or it's not. So, but we have to speak like that when speaking among people who are accustomed to a relativistic way of thinking. But actually, if you're going to speak about the universe, we can't verify everything through our sensory perception, even if aided by instruments. Telescopes and the like are supposed to be extensions of our senses. Although, if you look through modern telescopes, well, people don't look through telescopes. The telescope looks out, and the astronomer or whatever looks at a computer screen. Because if there's so many, anyway. So the Vedic understanding is that there is life everywhere. In the huge universe, within our bodies, that's now supported by the understanding of cells. There are innumerable living beings. And that we do have importance, nevertheless, even though there are innumerable beings, because the Supreme Being likes us. That's why we're important. Because He likes us. And illusion is because we don't like Him. That's the illusion. That's why we're in this material world. Because we are trying to be happy, separate from Him. Now, what is the nature? Last night, one lady asked me, is she here? I think not. Why is there illusion? And I gave an answer to it. Basically, it is because we are attached to this illusion. And I told one story from Mahabharata. And if you want to hear it, go and look on my website, or the temple website. I'm not going to tell that. I'll tell another one now, which approaches it from a somewhat different angle, the nature of illusion. Last night I told a story. Everyone likes stories. It's funny, isn't it? There's so many novels. That just means a novel is complete illusion. It's already this mature word is illusion. A novel or a movie is just an illusion within illusion. But we really get into it. If there's a movie and someone's about to get shot. Or if there's a sexual scene. we really get into it. We like to buy into the illusion. Yeah, it seems to be our proclivity to like illusion. It's an illusion within an illusion. We know, I guess I haven't been to a cinema for many years, but I presume they still project light onto a screen. Is it? Anyone know? Yeah, that's still what they do. It's the same, basically the same technology. I mean, it's probably much more advanced and refined than many years ago when I went. So we know it's an image on a screen, but we allow ourselves to forget that so that we can participate in the entertainment. Although, I don't know, entertainment is like killing people. Is that entertainment? It seems to me that's the main thing, isn't it? So anyway, from another angle, here's another story. That's last night I told a short story from Mahabharata, and now I will speak one which actually appears in, I've included it in this book, The Teachings of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It was a story that he used to tell, and probably, I would think almost certainly he didn't invent it. It may be a Bengali folk story or whatever. So Here it goes. There was a group of monkeys that used to live. What's that called? A fable. A fable is an animal story. With. From Upakhyana Upadesha. There were a group of monkeys who were captured and kept in the royal court. Nepal was a kingdom until quite recently. In retrospect, however bad it was at that time, it probably would have been better if it had remained as it was, at least up to the time of Birendra. Anyway, the monkeys were captured and they were kept for the young princes to play with. And they actually quite liked it because they were fed all nice delicacies from the kitchen, and they didn't have to run around the jungle and get all this fancy food. So the young monkeys in particular thought, well, this is great. But there was an older monkey who thought a little bit. And he saw that there are the royal stables where the king's valuable horses are kept. The warriors of old, they had to keep many expensive horses. Horses are required not just for racing and hunting and for generally moving around here, but for fighting wars. If you don't have good horses, you don't have any kingdom left. You won't keep it for very long. So the valuable royal horses were there, and the stables were made of wood, and of course there was lots of hay kept there to feed them. And just opposite was the royal kitchen, where cooking, as usual, goes on by wood. So there was the wise old monkey started to think. He said that, see, these monkeys, these young monkeys, being monkeys, they always tried to go into the kitchen to steal some food. Even though they're fed plenty of food, monkeys will be monkeys. So they go in the... And the cooks, they drive them away. Just like you see in the bazaars in India and Nepal, the fruit sellers, they have a stick to keep the cows away. Otherwise, they then... Of course, you're not supposed to beat cows, but you don't want them just to... How can you make a living if the cows come and eat everything that you have to sell? So, the monkey thought that one time it's going to happen like this. That a monkey goes to steal, and the cook pulls out a burning flame, a burning log from the fire, and hits the monkey. And the monkey's skin will catch fire. Then to put out the fire, he'll go and roll in the hay. The hay will catch fire. The horses who are tied up will be burned. And those that are released in time before they're burned up and are not too badly injured, then the royal veterinarian will treat them. And what is the recommended treatment for burned horses' flesh? They had advanced medical and veterinary science. The treatment is the fat from monkeys' bodies. So although we're living very comfortably here, And although the princes like the monkeys, when the king's valuable horses need to be cured, monkeys are going to be dead. So, the wise old monkey called together all the other monkeys and said, hey, look, this is a situation. It's going to happen today, tomorrow, the next day. Let's get out of here. Let's escape and go back to the jungle. And the other monkey said, hey, that's crazy. Come on, in the jungle we always had to rummage around and fight with other gangs of monkeys. And this is great. We're leading a royal life here. He said, yeah, what are you talking about? He said, well, it's going to happen someday. He said, come on. Didn't happen yesterday. Didn't happen the day before. Didn't happen the day before. Didn't happen the day before that. Why do you think it'll happen tomorrow? Won't happen. It's the same thing the chicken thinks. Chicken every day sees the man coming and he feeds him some food and he never thinks that the day will come when he'll come and pick him up and wring his throat. But the day comes. So, the elder monkey said goodbye to all his family members and friends and went to the jungle. And he'd come and look, and time to time, he'd see, and they'd all wave at him and say, hey, come and join. He said, no way. One day he came and saw, exactly as he had predicted, exactly the whole scene unfolded, and all the monkeys, they were captured and killed to cure the burned monkeys. So what has this got to do with illusion? Illusion, another feature of illusion is that we don't like to accept good advice that is for our ultimate benefit. Because we're in illusion. Why should we not accept advice that is for our benefit? Because we're in illusion. The illusion of thinking that, well, I'm quite comfortable now, so it'll always be like this. Again, the chicken. The pride of thinking, well, I don't know. Who's anyone to say anything to me? And the attachment. So we have moha, dambha, asakti, attachment. That even if we know it's not good for us, we feel so attached to it that we don't want to give it up. And there are many examples of this, a prime one of which is smoking. People know it's not good for them, but they go on anyway. And the government's put warning after warning, and until they used to put things like the Surgeon General has ascertained that tobacco can cause disease, and then they gradually, until they just got it down to smoking kills. And still people buy cigarettes, and it's not just the taste of tobacco. I tried it once in my life and I didn't think it tasted very nice. I think it must be an acquired taste. But it's also the whole imagery that goes with it, being a tough guy or nowadays a tough woman. I think, is it in America that more women smoke than men? In Britain it is, because it's picking up in India also, because there's a whole idea that women have to be show themselves to be as tough as men. And how ingesting poison makes you tough, I'm not sure. Indian men is coming down, and women it's going up. Yeah, you see the same news headlines as me. It just came up yesterday or today. Yesterday was it, yeah. So this idea that you, which the advertisers give you, that, well, it shows that you're really forward. You're not caught in the old ways of thinking. Now you're an independent woman. all this kind of thing. But the whole advertising industry, as it's called, although it's not really an industry, used to mean that you made something. But nowadays it means you just make money somehow or other. So the advertising industry, it's all based on the understanding that people like to be in illusion. For instance, showing people on cowboys out in the country to advertise smoking cigarettes. Well, people know that you're not going to be by smoking a cigarette, you're not going to be transported into some kind of idyllic cowboy existence, but they like the image that goes with it. And of course, beautiful women, photos of beautiful women are used to advertise all kinds of things. And again, I'm pretty much out of touch with a lot of the Western culture because I haven't lived in the West for more than 35 years. But so I have to go back a generation. I don't know if it's still true, but it used to be that car tires were sold. That was particularly famous, that car tires were sold with photos of beautiful and usually not very well-clothed women. Is it still the same? That was in Europe, in car tires. Now, you couldn't get anything pretty much less sexually stimulating than a car tire. You know, people don't go and dream of car tires. Oh, what a fantastic car tire. But somehow they made the connection so that people think, well, if I get this car tire, then they go, they buy the car tire, and they say, give me that car tire. Yeah, okay. And then you write the check. Where's the beautiful woman? In the advertisement. you know that it's an illusion, but you buy into it because people like illusions. Why are we an illusion? Because we like to be damn stupid. Why is that? Because we are stupid. Why are we stupid? Well, I guess each one of us should answer that question ourselves. You don't have to be stupid. I mean, anyone can be intelligent. In the human form of life, it is possible to be intelligent in a manner that is not possible in other forms of life. Dolphins, kangaroos, chimpanzees, jackals, raccoons, alligators, they all have their own different kinds of intelligence. But they don't have the intelligence by which they can consider, well, I may be very happy alligator here, eating. What do the alligators in Florida mostly live on? Raccoons?
Birds.
Probably need to eat quite a few birds to keep a big gator filled up. Dogs? Hey, let's bring some to India. There are plenty of crocodiles in India, but there's so many. There must be millions. Deers. Deer, yeah. Snakes, humans sometimes, yeah. But probably humans are not so good for them. Lots of bones and not so much flesh.
There are pythons in the swamps, I'm not sure.
Lots of pythons. So
Burmese python, I don't know how they got here, but a lot of Burmese.
So the pythons eat the gators or the gators eat the pythons? Or they have some kind of détente or what?
Both ways. They
eat each other.
Yeah. Mm.
Whichever. A big python eats a small gator, and a big gator eats a small python. It's like in the always that tussle between elephants and lions used to be before they killed them all. So the alligator doesn't think, well, you know, it's not so great being an alligator, and then birth after birth, I have to take, next life I might be eaten by my own son. I might take birth as a bird, and then my own son will, my son, alligator son, will eat me. They don't have any facility, they don't have the intelligence to think like that. But in the human form of life, we do. So, real intelligence means to consider this question. Why am I suffering? I don't want to suffer. We have to suffer. Why am I forced to suffer when I want to be happy? So the intricate answer is given in the Vedic knowledge. Of course, Buddha, he addressed this question also. That was the whole basis of Buddha becoming the first Buddhist. Suffering a little bit here from a stiff joint. So I'm changing my position. Or if we take the Mahayana version, he wasn't the first. Anyway. That was his whole thing, that suffering is caused by desire. So his solution is stop desire. And many of the words which he used were derived from an almost exactly the same as Sanskrit. They were Pali words, nirvana, in Sanskrit nirvana, dhamma, dharma. So practically, even the, although it's said that all the ideas he got through his own meditation, but practically the whole understanding is the same as the Vedic understanding. So he said that suffering is caused by desire. So we stop desire and then we stop suffering. However, the Vedic understanding is that we can't stop desire, because desire is inherent in our very being. So there's a big divide there. Of course, well, so we get into Mayavad and Shankara's. But anyway, if we speak Bhagavad Gita as it is, then there's no question of nirvana as generally conceived of in Buddhism, which means snuffing out, like a light, which a flame which is put out. The very first teaching of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Well, it depends what you call a teaching, but the first spiritual, directly addressing what we would call metaphysical issues, that is, natvevaham jatu nasam natvang neme janadipaha nachaiva na vivishyama sarve vayamatav param. Krishna addressing Arjuna in the midst of two armies told Arjuna that me, you, and all the kings present here, or the leaders of men present here, assembled to fight. There was never a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor any of them present here. Which means that nirvana, which is also a term used in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Nirvana. that we continue to exist even after liberation from this world. We don't cease to exist. Now, of course, in Buddhism, which most Buddhists have very little idea of Buddhist philosophy, which is true in Hinduism, Christianity, Judaism, most people, for them, it's a religion. They're not really interested in what it teaches very much, especially the deeper philosophical understanding. which is one reason why Buddhism and Hinduism can merge very easily. You can be a Hindu and a Buddhist. In the Buddhist understanding that of this, and again, when you say Buddhist understanding, there may be so many understandings, but the one or the one of several that is claimed to be the actual teaching of Buddha. That's the story of religion. There's what he taught, and then what others say that he really meant to say. That's in Christianity also. Christ said something else, and then Paul came along and said something almost completely different, and that became Christianity. That's supposed to be circumvented by Veda. Veda means knowledge, which is unchanging. Although there are people who will come along and interpret it in their own way. That's always a problem. Which is why Srila Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. Which, to me, when I first saw it, I thought it was a very strange title. Why is it called Bhagavad Gita as it is? Either it's Bhagavad Gita or it isn't Bhagavad Gita. So why do you call it Bhagavad Gita as it is? And I thought it's just like someone selling apples. Well, people don't sell apples in this country, do they? There are actual people who sell
apples. No, more people.
No.
It's just, you need a person.
You go in a supermarket and that's it. Well, difficult to get example. I'm culturally challenged here. Okay, well, imagine someone selling apples. Imagine you're back in Nepal where people still sell apples and other fruit. Mango season. Going on now. Then if someone says, "This is this is mangoes. It's real mango. Real mango." Expected, well, isn't it? Not expected that you go in the fruit bazaar and there's someone selling plastic mangoes. They sell real mangoes. So why Bhagavad Gita as it is? But I understood after, Srila Prabhupada explained that title at the beginning of his Bhagavad Gita as it is, that he compiled this because even though there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita in English, none of them touch the real spirit of what Krishna said to Arjuna. Bhagavad Gita is usually taken as it's something that Krishna said, and it's all cryptic, and then different people can come in and just make out of it whatever they want. But as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, Krishna actually had something very specific to communicate to Arjuna. The very specific thing was that Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight, but Arjuna was actually a very thoughtful and principled person. He wasn't such a fool that he was against fighting per se. And in fact, his whole life was dedicated to fighting for dharma, for upholding civilized human society. Yeah, Nepali Gurkhas are also famous for fighting. They're real fighting people. Oh, did you bring your, what's that called?
Kukri.
He has one at home, I saw yesterday. Who, any of you know how to use? You're trained in that?
We have, but we don't use it.
But do you know how to use it?
Yeah, in case.
You know how to use it?
Yeah.
That became famous about, 2 years ago, there was an Indian army officer. He was just retiring, actually. He was a sergeant on a train in India. And there was a whole gang of robbers entered the train and he killed 20 of them or something, just with his knife. They all had guns and everything. What one Gurukha can do with his, what's it called?
Kukri.
Kukri. It's, that's why the best chokidars in the, or the watchmen in India, they're all Gurkhas, right? Ex-army men. So, Arjuna was a real fighter. But he was a thoughtful and principled person, and Krishna wanted him to fight. He wasn't against the principle of fighting per se, but he thought in this instance it was unprincipled or against the principles of Dharma. So Krishna had to teach him that to go to a deeper level of Dharma than that which Arjuna understood, and then unfolded into that, what are we doing in this world and who are we, and it went right to the depths of philosophy. So Krishna had a specific purpose in speaking to Arjuna. And it's not that anyone can just come in and, as Srila Prabhupada used this, screw their own meaning out of it. Krishna had a specific purpose. So Krishna describes that we are eternal beings, that we do not belong in this place of suffering. We belong in the spiritual world of happiness. We can go there. We should go there. How we are to go there. All these things Krishna described. But some people like to take their own meaning out of it. But then why? As Srila Prabhupada pointed out, why call your book... You put the name Bhagavad Gita and then you give your own ideas. And why? Just give your own ideas. Why? Don't... It's like that example of smoking ganja, marijuana, through someone else's hand. You smoke, someone else holds and then you smoke. And then when the police come, they smell him. It's him. Not me. So, do your mischief. If you're going to do mischief, then do it yourself. If you're not speaking Bhagavad Gita, which means the essence of all the Vedas, which is the highest truth, if you want to talk all nonsense, then do it. But do it in your own name, then we know you're nonsense. But if you do it in Krishna's name and we take the authority of Krishna in doing so, that's a worse kind of cheating. So Srila Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, as ultimate spiritual knowledge. So we should hear this. We generally don't like to hear this. We think, well... Anyway, I have to get on with my life. But it's not our life. We're not in control. That's another great illusion. Ishvaroham. Krishna describes this as how a person in illusion thinks. He thinks, I'm in control. But we're not in control. We can't control. Any moment, disaster can strike. I'm not trying to make it strike. Generally, that's considered inauspicious to say things like that, to talk about accidents and death and disasters. But whether we talk about it or not, it will happen. That's the nature of this world. So it is better to talk about it so that we can prevent it. Just like Florida is famous for hurricanes. Well, don't talk about it. Well, we should talk about it so we can make some protection. What do? Plant trees and get out as quick as you can. Huh?
Put hurricane shutters on the windows.
I was just thinking that you might plant trees, or is the land, the soil itself is too soft to have strong trees? That would be some kind
of... You would rather trim it down because when the winds come, you don't want the trees to fall on houses.
Uh-huh. All right, that was my imagined hurricane defense. It had to be some distance, but that would...
Big wall.
Big wall. Big wall, yeah. But anyway, if you know there's going to be a problem, then you do something. It's good to discuss it and not think, well, everything's nice now, so why bother? But that's foolishness. So our whole existential position is one of foolishness, because, well, everything's okay now. But we have to die, we have to get reborn, we have to suffer disease, we have to suffer all day, we have to suffer in so many ways. We have to suffer insults, we have to, according to our karmic situation, we may have to suffer hunger, we may have to suffer being uprooted from our home. There are millions of refugees in the world. There's so many ways we can suffer. But we think, well, no. Everything's nice. Why should I bother? We have to suffer in this world. That is, one who perceives this can begin his spiritual journey. Like Buddha, as the story goes, Shakya Singh, he wanted to be, his father, the astrologer, warned that your son may become a spiritual person. So the father protected him from seeing suffering, but circumstantially he saw birth, death, old age and disease. And he thought, I also have to suffer this? So he thought, then we have to make some solution to this. So this is actual use of intelligence. But most people, due to foolishness, due to the pleasure, of the petty pleasures of this world, they prefer to remain in illusion. There's some examples I give again and again and again. Here's one from Srimad Bhagavatam, showing the nature of illusion. It's not only from Bhagavatam, but it is in Bhagavatam. There are similar examples elsewhere. A man is running, a tiger is chasing him. Running, 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 he doesn't notice that there's a cliff ahead, and he runs right off the edge of a cliff. But fortunately for him, there's a tree growing at the edge of the cliff, and its roots come out, so he catches the root. He's saved. And the tiger is up there waiting for him. So he looks down. It's a long drop. Could he survive the drop? Probably not. And what's more, there are poisonous snakes at the bottom. Then he looks up and he sees the root of the tree on which he's hanging. There's a rat which is nibbling it. So the root's likely to break very soon anyway. Then something, as he's looking up, something lands on his nose. And he looks up, what is that? Something wet. He looks up, he sees there's a beehive above, and a drop of honey has dropped on his nose. He sees another one's coming down, so he adjusts his position, put his tongue out, drop of honey. He thinks, oh, this honey is so nice, and it's so sweet, and I'm getting it for free, and this is wonderful. This is a material situation. Look on the bright side. You know that saying? Look on the bright side. You all know that saying? It's an English saying.
Actually, I gave this example to someone, and he said, why are you arguing the other way? That person's right. You know, he's making the best out of that
he's
situation.
He's making the best out of the situation, yeah. Look on the bright side. There was a song in England called Look on the Bright Side, a kind of sarcastic song. And it became popular among football supporters when their team is 3-0 down and there's only 10 minutes left, they've lost the game, and look on the bright, there's nothing bright to look on. You know, your team's been thrashed and humiliated, and there's nothing bright to look on. So this is the nature of this material. Just see, you gave this example to someone and he said, well, the man's right, he's looking on the bright side, you see, he's sure to die one way or the other, but he's making the best of the situation. That is, there are many examples like this. Another example is that a group of goats are being kept for slaughter. This is in the days before mechanized advanced slaughterhouses. But goats, I think, they still don't, you know, it's mostly bigger animals. I don't know, I haven't got a slaughterhouse, but you don't see goats being taken to slaughterhouses. They're mostly individual, isn't it? Anyway, you're from Gujarat, you don't see much animal slaughter there. Nepal, Shivratri is a bad time for buffaloes.
Yeah.
Poor buffalo. Oh, it's for at the time of Durga Puja.
That's
it. So the goats, they're all kept in a pen, and one by one they're being slaughtered. Their throat is cut. All the goats can see it. So what do? The male goat finds the female goat, and you can understand the rest of the story. They enjoy while you can. Of course, you don't expect goats to be philosophical or to say prayers, but if a human being should not be as foolish as a goat. So that's the beginning understanding. So this Krishna Consciousness Movement, it's all bliss, chanting the names of Krishna, dancing, taking delicious food offered to Krishna, purified food, but it's on a very sobering understanding. It's not another kind of entertainment or formal religion, it's very serious. Once when Srila Prabhupada was asked, why should you chant Hare Krishna? What is the benefit of chanting Hare Krishna? Srila Prabhupada replied very forcefully, it stops death. Bhavoshata. It is the medicine for stopping death. Where is that medicine? What is that medicine? Is there any medicine? Scientists, they're looking into so many medicines they can make for stopping diseases. Where is the medicine that will stop death? They don't have it. And death means rebirth. And then again death. And then again rebirth. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. What is the cure? We become Krishna conscious. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yudhyacha. When Arjuna asked Krishna the question, prayana kale chakatam geyosi niyatatmabihi. How can the self-control know the Lord of Yajna at the time of death? Krishna, actually Arjuna asked Krishna so many important questions in this section of Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna, he gave short answers to most, and this one whole chapter is dedicated to this important point. How to remember Krishna at the time of death. What is the most important time of life? Death. Why? Because yang yang vapi smaran bhavam tyajyante vakalevaram tang tame vaiti kauntaya sadatad bhava bhavita. Whatever consciousness we have cultivated throughout life, that will manifest at the time of death, and accordingly that will determine our future. So the most important time of life is death, but we have to prepare for that. Don't go wandering in forests with cliffs in which there are tigers. Keep out of danger. Well, the whole material world is full of danger. So we have to organize our life in such a way that at the time of death we can think of Krishna. But we don't want to. We prefer to be in illusion. Or we redefine Krishna to be part of our illusion. So many clever ways to avoid Krishna. Therefore, we should take guidance from Bhagavad Gita as it is, which I just saw this now. Do you have more copies of this in Nepali? You have more here?
Just one more.
Oh, I see. I didn't see the Nepali edition before.
They make this one too.
Oh, that's Ishopanishad. Yeah, I saw that. Actually, Nepali book production is...
The English version is really nice.
Extremely slow.
Yeah. I read the other one too.
Extremely slow. So, we should take advantage of this knowledge and utilize our valuable human form of life so that we don't get born again and we go to Krishna in the spiritual world. But if we take up this practices of Krishna consciousness, then we'll be happy in this life and happy eternally. And if we prefer to stay in illusion, then the happiness in that illusion is illusory. It's not real happiness. And we simply have to suffer life after life. Hare Krishna. Yeah, so any question about this, please?
All right, you just mentioned that the consciousness at the time of death determines your next destination.
Yeah, I mentioned, quoting Bhagavad Gita, I didn't just manufacture it out from the fertile factory of my brain, that the consciousness at the time of death determines our next life, yes.
No. You have seen persons have consciousness, and somehow others, they may meet their end in a very untimely fashion, where they probably don't even have a chance to prepare for their consciousness, like an accident or
okay, it's one of those many frequently asked questions. What if a devotee, having practiced Krishna consciousness for many years, leaves his body in circumstances in which he's unable to, seemingly unable to remember Krishna, or at least very strongly and intensely. For instance, sudden death by accident, which happens to devotees also. So the answer is that if someone has seriously practiced Krishna consciousness, that even if circumstantially he doesn't remember Krishna at the time of death, then Krishna will remember what he has done in his Krishna consciousness. Krishna won't forget that. And at least he'll give him another opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness. So that is what we should aim for. But we should know also that as Krishna, answering Arjuna's similar question, what happens to the yogi who is not able to complete his practice? And Krishna says, Nahi kalyana krit kaschid durgatim tata gachati. He addresses him as Tata, or my, just like my dear son, to reassure him. He said that one who has been engaged in auspicious activities never comes to an inauspicious situation. Neha bikramanashosti pratyavayona vidyate svapamapyatsya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat. Even a little sincere practice of dharma, this, especially here, this understood to mean paradharma or spiritual dharma, that will protect one from falling into the horrible position. So we don't know what will happen in future, which is why we should practice Krishna consciousness. And know, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Krishna told Arjuna, you tell everyone, my devotee will never perish. So we have to have that confidence that if we are sincere, then certainly Krishna will protect us. Remembering Krishna at the time of death, it's also not something mechanical. Because bhakti, our relationship with Krishna, is one of love. It's not that, well, okay, I'm going to chant 3 times 64 rounds every day, eat only 1 grain of rice every day, and in this way, I'm going to march up to Vaikuntham, break the doors down, and go marching in. It doesn't work like that. Even if one time we chant with, actually chant Hare Krishna, oh Radha, oh Krishna, please engage me in your service, they'll immediately accept us. But if we chant ostentatiously, thinking that, yeah, well, by my chanting, I'm going to do it, I'll show I'm a great devotee, and then that's not chanting at all. It's not a mechanical process. We have to attract the mercy of Krishna, which can be done. Again, we can't do that mechanically either. We can only pray for that. Utter humility. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. It's easy to say, but we don't find it very easy to actually follow. Trinadapi sunicha. We can all chant it. Trinadapi sunichena tarorivasa hishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadaharihi. Thinking oneself to be much lower than grass, being more tolerant than a tree, not desiring honor, but being ready to offer to others. In this way, with this attitude, the name of Hari should always be chanted. So easy to say, but seems very difficult for us. But that is the key. Once Srila Prabhupada, what was that anecdote? This OBL Kapoor told us that he asked OBL Kapoor, he said to Srila Prabhupada, this was when Srila Prabhupada was in his family life before he accepted sannyas. He was doing pharmaceutical business. So his friend OBL Kapoor, they were both living in Allahabad. They were both disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He asked him, so you know all these chemical formula? Can you give me the formula that will give love of God? So Srila Prabhupada, he said, yeah, I know the formula, but it's very difficult to actually make it. So what is that formula? And that formula is already given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shuno, shuno. No, what is that? Harshe Prabhu kahe shuno shurup ram rai ki bhabe nama loile prema upajai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu happily said to Srup Damodar and Ramananda Rai, now I'll tell you, you hear, what is the formula, which way we have to chant Hare Krishna so that prem, love of Krishna, arises in our heart. And what is that? Chunadapi sinichena tororivyasahishna. So Srila Prabhupada said, yeah, I know the formula, but it's difficult one to mix. Difficult to prepare. So, Hare Krishna. Should I finish there, or do you want to go on with more questions? It's another working day tomorrow. I know last night I waffled on longer than expected. Oh, I said also I speak in Hindi. To do shabd, Hindi mein kahunga, do shabd. Hare Krishna. Do shab ka matlab, do se thora jada. To Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yehi maha mantra hai. Mantra shabd ka arth hai. Wo upai, visheshkar wo dhvani, jisse man ka tran paritran udhar hote. To Vaidik shastron mein asankhya mantra hai, maha mantra hai, wo mahan mantra, jisse sab log asane se turant hi wo param siddhi arthat maya ka moha se vimukt hona, wo param siddhi prapt kar sakti hai. To Chaitanya Mahaprabhu jo swayam Bhagavan Krishna hi hai, unhone Brihannaradiya Puran Shastra se ish shlok Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Nama Iva Kevalam Kalo Nasteva 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 Gatiranyata ish shlok leke Hare Krishna Mahamantra Prachakyate ish shloka arte bahut saral ate Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Nama Eva arthat nischayi kevalam keval Hari ka naam se is Kali Yug mein gati param gati param dham Bhagavan ka dham prapt hote hain. To isliye Visheshka Kali Yug mein, is Kali Yug jis mein hum abhi upasthit hai, is Kali Yug mein Hari ka naam kirtan karna chahiye. Visheshka Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. To isliye har ek vyakti ke liye ye param upadesh hai. Hare Krishna japiye aur is prakar sukhi rahiye. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.